Chapter 18. The In-Betweener. The charter field had two names. On the county map, it was Raritan Industrial Air Park. On the sign by the service road, it was North Jersey Executive Transit. On the paper Wong held against the steering wheel, it had been circled in black marker and labeled Choke Point. Nia trusted the paper more than the sign. The place sat between warehouses, drainage ditches, and a low strip of wet grass that had given up trying to look separate from the pavement. Floodlights turned the rain silver. Hangars lined the service road with numbers painted above their doors. Private jets waited behind chain-link fences as if they were expensive animals allowed to be nervous. The whole field smelled like fuel, damp cardboard, and old asphalt.
Nia sat in the back of the van with Tessa's green tote pressed between her knees and Mrs. Kim's paper sack folded carefully inside it. She had not eaten the last rice ball. She had wrapped it back up because wanting food and being able to eat food had become separate administrative departments inside her body. Mara sat beside her, one hand on the strap of her medical bag. Asha sat on the other side, writing in a notebook balanced on one knee. Her left wrist was bare. She kept touching it with two fingers, then stopping herself. Monica rode in the passenger seat with a tablet in her lap. The screen showed three feeds, a traffic camera near the entrance, a shaky phone stream from someone inside the last witnesses crowd, and a satellite image with a patch of interference over Hangar 6. Wong drove. That had surprised Nia until the first mile, after which it became clear that he drove exactly the way he did everything else, with irritation, competence, and no visible respect for anyone else's signage.
"We enter through the service gate," Wong said. "We find Crow, we separate the true cases from the crowd, we leave before Adam turns the field into a box." Nia looked at Durain running down the window. "That sounds like several plans pretending to be one plan."
"Correct."
"Good. I hate when bad plans are lonely." Wong did not look back. "This one has company." Asha clicked her pen once. Mara looked at her. "You all right?"
"No."
"Good answer." It was efficient. The van hit a pothole. The tote bumped Nia's knees. For half a second, she saw a crosswalk in white paint, rain glossing the stripes, Tessa turning her head with the expression she used when she had already forgiven Nia and was angry about it. Nia gripped the tote until the vinyl creaked. The field moved around her in lines.
Roads usually made sense to her now, not in a way she liked. Since the return, intersections showed their possible harms with a kind of brutal honesty. A delivery truck could angle wrong, a cyclist could vanish behind a pillar, a driver could look at a phone for 2 seconds and turn a street into a court record. Nia did not see the future. She saw what the present had left available. Here, the lines refused to stay in one category. A service lane became an arrival path, became an emergency exit, became a loading corridor, became a place where someone had once stood with luggage and called it escape. The hangar doors were too large for people and too small for storms. The private terminal had customs decals on one window and a hand-lettered sign on another. Family Reunification Intake. Use Side Door. Beside that sign, someone had taped a sheet of paper with one word written in black marker. Vormir. Nia's stomach tightened.
"They made flyers," she said.
Monica checked the traffic feed. "Those are directions." "That's worse." "Yes." The van slowed at the gate. Two police cruisers blocked one lane. A transit authority truck blocked another. People in reflective jackets stood under cheap rain ponchos, speaking into radios and looking toward Hangar 6 with the exhausted anger of people whose day had become someone else's religion. Beyond them, the last witnesses moved through the rain. They were ordinary enough to make Nia's throat hurt. A woman in pajama pants under a winter coat. An old man with an oxygen canister pulled in a wheeled cart. A college kid carrying a backpack and a stuffed dinosaur. A man in a suit with no socks. Two teenagers sharing earbuds. three people who looked like volunteers and had already lost the argument with staying outside.
Some were misclaimed. Nia could feel that now, though it did not arrive as a glow or a mark. It was more like the way a body in a crowd knows which other bodies are running. Pull answering pull. Final seconds leaning toward final seconds. True cases scattered through frightened people who had learned the same word and thought it meant them. The danger stood there. Elias had built a room large enough for the wrong people to enter. Wong rolled down the window. A wet transit officer stepped close. Field is closed. I am aware. No unauthorized entry. Wong held up a badge Nia could not read. The officer looked at it, then looked at Wong. What agency is that? The one having the worst night. The officer stared at him. Monica leaned across the seat and showed her own identification. The officer's posture changed. That was how Nia knew Monica's badge belonged to a world with more expensive consequences.
You need to get them out of there, the officer said. They won't listen to us. Some guy in the hangar keeps telling them not to rush, but every time he says wait, more people show up.
Elias, Mara said.
The officer looked toward the hangar. If that's him, he's either helping or making it impossible to help.
Both. Asha said. The gate opened. Wong drove through. The pull shifted under Nia's ribs. For the first time since the crosswalk, it felt like standing in the path of an accident, large enough that no one could point to the first mistake. The field was full of almosts. Almost boarding. Almost stopping. Almost believing. Almost turning back. Every almost tugged at the others until the whole place felt threaded. At Hangar 6, someone had opened the main door halfway.
Crowds gathered best around openings. Nia had learned that in office fire drills, ferry terminals, hospital waiting rooms, and every terrible video she had watched after the blip while pretending she was looking for procedural information. People trusted openings even when openings were the problem. Elias stood just inside the hangar. He looked smaller than he had in the gym footage and more tired than Nia wanted him to be. His coat was soaked at the shoulders. His legal pad had gone limp from rain. He held it against his chest anyway, one hand over the names as if his body could keep the ink from running. He was speaking to a woman with a portable oxygen canister. If your tank is below half, you do not get on any vehicle until we confirm supply at the other end, he said. But what if there is no other end? Then you need the tank here. The woman started crying. Elias crouched in front of her. He did not touch the cart. He did not touch her hand. I know.
The cruel part was that he knew. Mara got out of the van first. Rain hit her hair and jacket. She zipped the medical bag closed, then walked toward Elias with the focused stride of someone entering a bad scene before anyone had admitted it was a scene. Asha followed. Monica and Wong came after her. Nia stayed in the van for one breath too long. Tess's tote sat against her knees. Mrs. Kim's voice returned with the dry socks and the rice. You carry what is yours. I carry what is mine. Nia picked up the tote and stepped into the rain. The hangar was warmer than outside and worse for it. People had brought space heaters, coffee urns, phone chargers, folding chairs, blankets, and too many rumors. Someone had taped printed maps along one wall. Someone else had used blue painter's tape to mark intake lines on the concrete floor, medical, transport, family contact, witness statements. At the far end of the hangar, a private jet waited with its stare down.
No one was boarding it. Everyone kept looking at the service door behind it. The door was painted gray. Above it, an old sign read, Authorized Personnel Only. Someone had stuck a paper over that sign. Vormir Transit Group. Hold until called. The paper curled in the damp air. Nia did not like the door. It was the wrong size for how much attention it held. Elias saw Mara before Mara spoke. Relief crossed his face first, then guilt, then something that looked almost like being caught. Mara, he said. Stop moving them. She skipped hello and accusation and went straight to the thing that had to happen. Elias looked past her to the crowd. I'm trying to slow them down. Slow is still moving. Staying is not neutral anymore. Asha stepped beside Mara. Neither is departure under a false endpoint. Elias looked at her wrist. Adam found you?
briefly. Did he hurt?
The question came too fast to be strategic. Asha's face changed by one degree. No. Then why do you look like that? Because no is not enough. Elias absorbed that. Naya saw him try to put it somewhere useful and fail. Wong looked toward the gray service door. Who opened that route?
I didn't, Elias said.
Monica's head turned. Then who did? No one answered. The public address system clicked on. Static filled the hangar. Several people flinched. A child started crying near the coffee table. The oxygen cart woman gripped her handle with both hands. The speakers gave one soft chime, like an airport announcement delayed by years. "Passengers who are departing," said a voice, "must complete arrival processing before return." The crowd went silent. Naya looked at Monica. Monica's eyes had gone bright at the edges. "That's not a recording." The PA clicked again.
"Passengers who are arriving," said the same voice, "must surrender departure claims before crossing." Wong said no. Asha looked at him. No what? No to all of that. The gray service door opened 6 inches. Orange light showed at the bottom. The pull inside Nia answered so hard she dropped Tessa's tote. Mara caught the strap before it hit the floor. Nia stared at her. Mara handed it back. "Yours." "Thank you." "Keep it close." Nia did. Near the hangar wall, a monitor that had been showing flight plans flickered. The image split into 3 panels. In one, Sar Ven stood in a public transit hall with rainwater shining on the stone floor. People on her world had made a wide space around her. Aaron stood behind her, with the blank name strip held in both hands like a fragile tool.
In another, Ovek sat inside a maintenance car stopped at a transfer platform. Vessa had one arm across the open door. Outside, company officers and family representatives argued in a language the monitor translated badly and late. In the third, gold light washed over black stone. Adam stood somewhere with no roof. His hands were raised. Around him, a ring of gold had begun to form. Monica moved closer to the screen. "He's at the threshold." "Vormir?" Nia asked. "Near enough to matter." On the monitor, Adam turned his head as if he had heard her through the glass. Then the image broke. The gray door opened another inch. Sar's voice came through the hangar speakers instead of the monitor. "This is not my transit hall." Everyone turned toward the service door. It opened wider. Sar stepped through.
She wore the same travel coat from the feed, rain dark at the shoulders, blank name strip looped around her wrist. Behind her, for 1 second, Naya saw the transit hall from another world. Black stone, brass basins, 3 officials frozen mid-argument, Aaron's face pale with shock. Then the doorway showed only the hangar. Sar looked around once and understood too much too quickly. "Who authorized this convergence?" Wong pointed at the door. "Apparently the door." "Doors do not hold office." "I am aware." The monitor beside them sparked. Ovek's maintenance car door slid open. The gray service door in the hangar answered it. Vessa shouted something from the other side that arrived as 3 conflicting translations. Ovek ducked under her arm and stepped into Hangar 6 with both hands pressed to their chest. They were smaller in person.
That was Naya's first thought, and she hated herself for it. The screen had made Ovek into a case, a symbol, a child-shaped answer to a map. In the hangar, they were simply a child with rain on their sleeves and dust-colored marks at their collar. Vessa came through after them, furious and afraid. "This is not the approved route," she said. "There isn't one," Mara said. Ovek looked at the gray door. "The door changed its mind," they said. Sar lowered herself slightly to Ovek's height. "Does it speak to you?" Ovek shook her head. "It listens wrong." The crowd began murmuring. People recognized Sar from translated clips. People recognized Ovek from the leaked map. Recognition moved through the hangar faster than explanation. Phones lifted. Volunteers pushed them down. Someone whispered, "misclaimed," like the word had brought proof of itself. Elias closed his eyes. Naya watched him hear the room become larger than he could hold.
"Everyone stay where you are," he called. For once, people listened. Then the gray door opened all the way. The thing standing in it was not tall. That made it worse. Naya had expected scale from cosmic things. Adam had brought gold and gravity. Death had brought an ambulance and exact knowledge. This figure brought the wrongness of a person standing in a doorway and making the doorway look less real than the body inside it. One half of its coat was dry, the other dripped water onto the concrete. One hand was gloved, one was bare. One eye reflected the hangar lights, the other held orange dark, like sunset seen through closed eyelids. The line down the center of its face did not stay centered. When Naya tried to look at it, her vision corrected and corrected again, the way a camera hunted for focus on rain. The figure looked at the crowd, then at Adam's broken image on the monitor, then at Ovek. Ovek stepped behind Vesa without being told.
Good, Naya thought. Good. The figure smiled with only one side of its mouth. Nobody moved. Wong raised both hands. Do not speak through my wards. Your wards were built for shives, the figure said. Its voice did not echo. It arrived twice, a fraction apart, and met itself in the ear. Sar's chin lifted. What office do you hold? The figure turned to her with interest. Interval. That is not an office. It is where offices fail. Sar's face settled into public stillness. Then you have no mandate. Mandate belongs to completed rooms. Mara moved half a step toward Ovek and half a step toward the crowd, which was very Mara and very impossible. Name yourself, Wong said. The figure looked at him. You know the old names. I know enough not to use them for you. Careful, sorcerer. Annoyed sorcerer.
A few people near the coffee table laughed because fear needed somewhere to go. The figure did not seem to notice. Its attention moved to Elias. You made a room. Elias swallowed. I made a place for people to speak. You made many final seconds face one another. I didn't know that at first. You know it now. Elias's legal pad bent in his hand. Mara said, Elias. He looked at her. She shook her head once. Do not answer for the room. Nia did not know whether Mara had said it aloud. She did not think so. Elias heard it anyway, or heard enough. What do you want? He asked the figure. Asha made a sharp motion with her pen. Bad question. Too late. The figure looked pleased. Use. The word landed flat. No seduction, no promise, no mercy. Use. The crowd shifted back. Elias went pale.
The figure continued. Death holds endings. The stone held removals. The gold one would hold breach. You hold interruption. Living interruption. Conscious hinge. Objecting door. We're people, Naya said. The figure's head turned toward her. For one awful second, Naya saw Tessa in the orange eye. Not Tessa alive, not Tessa restored. Tessa at the crosswalk, mouth opening around Naya's name, one hand lifting too late. Naya could not breathe. Mrs. Kim's paper sack crinkled inside the tote. You say hello, you do not promise more. Naya forced air into her lungs. We're people, she said again. People are the only doors that object. Then hear the objection. The figure tilted its head. Objection creates motion. That's not hearing. It is enough. No, Mara said. The word cut through the hangar.
Death had said the dead were easy to keep. Mara sounded like someone who had decided the living would be more trouble. The figure looked at her and did not smile. You escaped a hand. I know whose. Do you know what escaped with you?
Mara did not answer. Rafi's voice came through the PA system. "Tell my girls I tried." Mara's face changed. Naya saw Asha reach toward her and stop before touching. Elias whispered, "Don't." The figure looked at him. "You want the boy." Under the folding table near the intake lines, Jonah Mills appeared. Only for a second. Small knees, blue jacket, one shoe untied. Elias made one broken step forward before Mara caught his sleeve. "No," she said. "I saw him. I know. He was there. I know." The gray door brightened behind the figure.
More faces moved in the orange dark. Nia did not let herself look for Tessa. Looking was also a kind of reaching. She understood that now. She hated understanding it. Sar spoke into the pressure. "This is witness coercion." The figure turned back to her. Witness becomes leverage when placed correctly. That is why witnesses require protection. Protection creates custody. Only in corrupt systems. All systems become corrupt at thresholds. Sar's mouth tightened. "You speak like a tribunal that has never buried anyone." The figure blinked once. Both eyes closed at different speeds. Ovek's voice came from behind Vesa. "It wants us to be door parts." The figure looked at them. Ovek held Vesa's sleeve in one hand and their own name strip in the other. "A hinge is honored," the figure said. Ovek shook their head. "A hinge does not choose where the door goes."
Silence moved through the hangar, human and immediate. People had heard a child make the adult thing small enough to see. Adam's image returned on the monitor. Gold light filled the screen. His face was strained now, still composed, but no longer distant. "Wong," Adam said. The sound broke, then stabilized. "It is using the convergence." Monica moved to the tablet. "We noticed. Get them away from the door." "We are attempting that." The figure turned toward the screen. "Containment makes a frame." Adam heard it. His expression changed. For the first time, Nia saw him understand that being right had made him useful to something worse. Gold light flared around the gray door. The figure lifted its bare hand. The gold bent, not breaking, bending. Adam's containment ring, wherever he stood, reached toward the hangar like a lock searching for a latch. The in-betweener used it as a doorframe.
Monica's voice sharpened. "Adam, drop the field. If I drop it, the breach opens. If you hold it, it opens with hinges." Adam looked past the screen, towards something they could not see. He did not drop it. Of course he didn't. Nia did not blame him. That was new and terrible. If she had a gold field big enough to stop this, she might hold it too. She might hold it and call it care while people begged on the other side. Asha stepped toward the gray door. Mara caught her arm. "No! I'm not going through. I'm checking the mechanism. Those words have killed people in labs. Probably." Wong moved before either of them could keep arguing. He drew a circle in the air with one hand, then another inside it, then cut both with two fingers. Sparks spat sideways and died. "The field is anchored from the other side," he said. "Can you close this side?" Mara asked. "Not while the crowd is feeding it."
Elias stared at him. "What does that mean?" Wong's answer was unkind because there was no kind version. "They believe the door belongs to them." Elias turned toward the crowd. Faces looked back at him. Harriet Solis, Malik Ross, the woman with the oxygen tank, the college kid with the stuffed dinosaur, false positives, true misclaimed, people who had heard water in dreams, people who had simply lost someone and found a word that gave grief an address. Elias had wanted to give them a room. Now the room had a mouth. "Listen to me," Elias said. The hangar speakers hissed. The figure in the doorway waited. Elias stepped onto a low cargo pallet. He did not look like a prophet there. He looked like a soaked counselor holding a ruined legal pad. "I was wrong about the debt." The crowd stirred. Someone said, "No." Someone else started crying. Elias flinched, but kept going.
"I was right that something happened to us. I was right that the final seconds did not close. I was right that you were not imagining the water, the voices, the pull. But I was wrong to tell you what it meant before I knew who wanted that meaning from us."
The figure watched him with interest. Mara did not move. Nia saw Jonah under the table again, and this time Elias did not look. "Good," she thought. "Please, please, keep not looking." Elias raised the legal pad. Rain had blurred the names. "If you came because I said Vormir was where the debt comes due, hear me now, I do not know that. If you came because you thought the dead were asking you to finish dying, hear me now, I do not know that. If you came because staying hurt, because no one believed you, because a room full of people saying the same impossible thing felt like proof you were not alone." His voice almost failed. He lowered the pad. "That part was real." The crowd quieted.
"But this door is not care." The figure's gloved hand flexed, the orange light dimmed by a fraction. Asha whispered, "Keep going." Elias did. "No one boards. No one crosses. If you are in medical risk, go to the left line. If you have family outside, call them. If you have nowhere to go, stay in the hangar with the volunteers and let them count you as alive." The oxygen cart woman began to sob. Two volunteers moved toward her, slowly, correctly, asking before touching. The crowd began to break apart unevenly, but it happened enough. The pull inside Nia loosened. Then Adam's gold surged. On the monitor, he staggered. The in-betweener's orange eye widened. The gray door slammed open. Wind came through without air. Black water shone beyond the threshold, and above it hung an orange horizon that made every light in the hangar look temporary. People screamed. The crowd surged backward.
The in-betweener turned both hands outward, one gloved, one bare. "Interruption remains," it said. The gold field caught the door. The door caught the crowd. The crowd caught the dead. Nia saw all of it as an accident geometry too large to stop from outside. A truck already in the intersection, a body already stepping down from the curb, a hand already reaching. Every path led through the same point because too many people had built roads to it. There was no safe outside. Mara saw it too. Nia knew because Mara stopped trying to pull everyone back and started choosing who had to move forward. "Wong," Mara said. "Yes." "Small team." "Yes." "No crowd." "Yes." Asha looked at Elias. "You stay." He shook his head once. "Elias, it has Jonah." Mara stepped close enough that he had to look at her. "It has the place Jonah ended. That is not the same as Jonah."
He shut his eyes. For one breath, Nia thought he would break. Then Odovec walked to him. Vesa drew breath to object and stopped herself. Odovec held out a blank strip. Elias stared at it. "What is that?" "For a name that is not done being held." His hand shook when he took it. Odovec said, "You can write Jonah. You cannot spend him." Elias folded around the strip. No one touched him. Leaving him untouched was its own mercy. The service door groaned. Adam's voice came through the monitor, strained almost past recognition.
"If anyone is coming, come now."
Wong looked furious. "I hate when he is right." Sar stepped forward. "I go." From the doorway that had brought her, Aaron's voice called her name once before the image folded away. Sar did not look back. "I know." Odovec looked at the door, then at Vesa.
I go too, they said.
No,
Vesa said.
Ovek held her gaze. Child and not child. Frightened and certain in the small way children could be certain when adults had made every larger certainty useless. The rooms are stacked. If no one writes, it will use all the names. Vess's face changed. She crouched and tied Ovik's collar tighter against the rein. Then write one at a time. Ovek nodded. Nia picked up Tess's tote. Mara looked at her. You don't have to. Nia's breath caught sideways. You keep saying that, like the words know how to help. Mara accepted that without smiling. Aisha tore a page from her notebook and handed it to Wong. Medication risks, known true cases, and who needs monitoring if the crowd destabilizes. Wong took it. You are assuming I stay. You are the only one here with enough authority to keep local agencies from turning this into arrests. That is manipulative. It is triage. He glared at her. Then he stayed.
Monica checked the gold-lit monitor, then the threshold. I can hold the visual path for a few seconds. You are not coming? Nia asked. Monica's light flickered over her hands. If I go, the crowd loses the one person who can tell them the door is lying. Nia nodded. That left Mara, Asha, Nia, Sar, Ovek, and Elias. He looked at the blank strip in his hand. Mara said, No crowd. No crowd, he said. No debt. He swallowed. No debt. No using Jonah to open anything. His face twisted. Say it, Mara said. Elias looked toward the black water. Then he looked back at the hangar, at Harriet, at Malik, at the oxygen cart woman, at every person who had trusted him because he had given pain a room. No using Jonah. The strip in his hand stayed blank. The in-betweener watched all of this with an expression too interested to be anger. Choice remains, it said.
Yeah, Nia said. Annoying, isn't it?
For the first time, the figure looked directly at her without Tessa in its eye. Nia held the tote against her side. Mrs. Kim's paper sack was inside. The rice ball, the socks, the boundary. The gray door opened onto black water, orange light, and Adam's failing gold. Nia stepped after Mara before the thing in the doorway could decide what she was for.